Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
The Medicare annual election period deadline is coming soon. I'm Meredith Vieira, here with examples of people who found the key to the right coverage at myhealthpolicy.com. Meet Larry. He likes doing things online.
I took my time and found the best Medicare Advantage plan for me at myhealthpolicy.com.
Next is Mary. When she wanted answers, she picked up the phone.
I wanted a local perspective on plan, so I called myhealthpolicy.com.
And finally, Michael.
I prefer face-to-face, so I chose myhealthpolicy.com and enrolled on the spot.
Go to myhealthpolicy.com to learn about top-rated Medicare Advantage plans in your area, including $0 premium plans, or call 1-800-GO-START. That's 1-800-GO-START. myhealthpolicy.com. Meredith Vieira is a paid endorser. KF Agency operates myhealthpolicy.com, not connected with or endorsed by the U.S. government or the federal Medicare program. A licensed insurance agent may call.
You know what I want? I want to talk sense.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast, and I'm going to introduce our guest today with an excerpt from some of his writing. There are no guarantees that this season will not end in crushing despair, reminiscent of our recent past. There's no guarantee that the Raptors make the finals. There's no guarantee that recent wins over the Warriors hint at potential success if the two teams were to meet in June. It's all on the table. And it's the unknown that makes the journey that much greater. This year, once again, feels different. And I'm going to ride that wave until I'm either heartbroken again or vindicated for the first time. Because one thing is certain, this could be a fun journey to be on. Matt Schantz, are you vindicated or are you heartbroken, my guy?
Right now, it's probably closer to the heartbroken side. But, you know, the journey rides on, I guess.
Yeah. Tell the people about what you do.
Yeah, I'm a writer here with Raptors Republic and just kind of trying to be as an optimistic Raptors fan, which, as history has taught us, is a hard thing to do.
Do you think that Raptors Republic skews more optimistic or pessimistic among the writers? Obviously, the comments are the wild, wild west, but what do you think of the writers?
I would say in general, we skew more optimistic. We've got guys like Anthony, myself, yourself, Lewis. So we've got a lot of guys who really slant more towards the positive side of things, but our Slack can get a little bit heated sometimes with in the moment.
as with anything, I'm sure. I mean, you watch a guy, and that's what we'll talk about first, the Kyle Lowry thing, which is how it is written in my notes. I'm going to try and be as transparent as possible, since sometimes people think we're scheming. But well, we'll let you know that I just have the Kyle Lowry thing written down, and we'll branch off of that. Just give me 5 words, 10 words to describe how you felt watching that.
It was painful in the moment. Every time that he had an open shot and either missed it or there was moments where he hesitated in driving the lane, he just seemed to be a little bit off balance when it came to his own offensive game. And yet the numbers still indicate that he was a positive well on the floor and the Raptors suffered whenever he wasn't. It's one of those confusing Kyle Lowry experiences.
Yeah. So the plus 11, which apparently now is a more divisive statement than Republican or Democrat, where do you sit on that? Which side are you on? Are you pro plus 11? Are you negative plus 11? What's your take on that?
I would slant more towards the pro. I would say that in the grand scheme, Kyle was not our biggest problem, and that's an understatement. There was far bigger issues that the Raptors experienced in yesterday's game or in Saturday's game. And so I would skew more towards the positive.
Okay, so as the guy who wrote the quick reaction and just saying now that there were far bigger things that we had to deal with, are there any, just off the top of your head, one, two things that you really want to highlight that the Raptors can do better or failed to do?
One that jumps out, and also because I somebody grabbed a screen cap of it on Twitter, is Ibaka's screening. He was really, really poor in that game. I think it was Swar Lasers who pointed it out. On one possession, he missed four straight screens that he didn't even catch any part of the defender's body. And that's just can't happen. It hurts the entire offensive scheme when we can't get those switches.
Yeah, it was, they ran this whole set above the break, but Ibaka's like seemingly laissez-faire attitude towards screening made it so that Danny Green was pulling up from above the break. And that's the way the offense went in an important third quarter. Yeah, I totally agree. I guess outside of the Ibaka screening, which is like just a very granular thing, it was that emblematic of a bigger problem to you, or are there other things that you saw?
I think in a lot of ways, it was one of those nights. You look at the first quarter in particular. The Raptors created a lot of good looks and missed them. It seems silly to say that, but it's true. They if they get those same looks, you know, every other night they're going to get a far, far better result, and they just happen to fall a little bit short. Van Vliet got kind of abused by Augustine a few times. He, bless him, he tries hard, but he just wasn't quite getting that the contact that's needed.
Yeah. Well, the 1 of 9 shooting from the corners is kind of a bummer, especially when the game, like the margins were so close this whole game. Obviously, the Magic had their big second quarter run. The Raptors had their big third quarter run. But outside of that, the margins of this game were pretty close. The game was played within a few points of each other for most of the game. And seeing how much the Raptors might have benefited from a corner three make here or there. I think Van Vliet was the only one to make a corner three. I think he had 3 threes in the game. But what that would have lent to the offense as far as spacing and then obviously just points would have been paramount to a Raptors win. But here we are lamenting missed shots for, I don't know, maybe the 18th time in Raptors playoff history. It's disappointing. Do you think there's a remedy for the missed shots? Do you think, or is just go put them up? You just have to shoot it.
I think you just got to shoot it. The Raptors have the shooters capable. Siakam has shown that he can be a great 3-point shooter this season, and yet he was 0 for 4. Lowry was 0 for 6. Danny was capable at 3 for 7. Kawhi hit his 3 for 5. I think you just kind of got to work through it and keep shooting, shoot yourself out of the slump to a certain degree. But we can also do a little bit more work to get inside and get open looks in a different capacity. But you said it yourself, the Raptors shot 1 for 9 from 3 in the corner. Michael Carter Williams hit 2 corner threes. Like that's just, it's the stupidity of basketball that sometimes stuff just happens.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you, since we're both supposedly optimist-leaning Raptors writers, even I'm a big Kyle Lowry fan. I wrote this big piece. You had a little piece of it, but I had this big thing where I asked everybody, well, how is Kyle Lowry important and what does he do? And I wrote that, but even still, it's hard to watch that game and watch Michael Carter-Williams hit a pull-up three and a corner three and see Kyle Lowry not replicate that at all on the other end. See Aaron Gordon hitting clutch time triples, Jonathan Isaac hitting from downtown, DJ Augustine putting up 25 points. It's hard to remove yourself from the irrational mindset of like, Kyle Lowry, please make a shot. Even if you understand that he's stirring the pot and he's doing so much else on offense that the Raptors are crumbling without him. But like, what do you tell yourself when you know that Kyle Lowry is to the benefit of the Raptors? but there's so many jarring statistics and failures smacking you in the face. How do you make yourself feel better about it?
That's a loaded question. it's kind of, he's been around long enough that I've kind of grown comfortable with it to a certain degree. It's incredibly annoying in that moment when, we should expect better than Kyle Lowry to be outscored by DJ Augustine and Michael Carter Williams 35-0. Like, that's just the reality of it. He needs to and would generally win that matchup. But occasionally he does go through shooting slumps. You and I were talking just before we started actually recording this. That piece that I wrote, kind of explaining how I was going to try and enjoy this ride, came in the middle of a Kyle Lowry shooting slump that was kind of melting down Twitter. He doesn't get the credit often for the positivities that he does, because when he has those bad games, they are just the stats that we traditionally look at, the impact of a game in regards to scoring, they're just so blatantly missing in regards. And yet he still had 8 assists. He was impacting the game in other ways. And I think that he's still a positive.
Right. And there's also the aspect of that you can't escape narrative ever. I mean, Damian Lillard has been, I guess, one of the worst playoff performers from the point guard position for the last 3 years. He's struggled mightily, more so than Kyle Lowry, probably on a similar level to DeMar DeRozan. But he's known as Dame Time. He's known as the guy who made the shot to like knock the Rockets out of the first round. And even if Kyle puts up, I think it was 50%, 44%, and 81% splits last year in a second round, like you went two rounds deep into the playoffs, he puts up these great splits. He was good the year before as well, but he still has this, I guess, name out there that it's like chokers attached to it. Is there a way forward for Kyle Lowry to completely skirt that and to build himself a new name in this new team with Kawhi Leonard instead of DeMar DeRozan, with Marc Gasol instead of Jonas Valanciunas? How does Kyle Lowry reclaim his narrative and become the next Chauncey Billups, something like that?
I think you said it good. The narrative is tough to rescript. Once people kind of have a mindset in place for you, it's tough to change that. We would need to see a couple big series from Lowry in order to change that narrative. But there would still be some so entrenched in that belief and enjoying that as a punchline that, let's say the Raptors get to the finals, they, lose in 6 or 7, or even, actually win the championship in some alternate universe.
You said it out loud.
I'm speaking hypothetically, but hypothetically, if that happened, there would still be some people who would kind of denigrate Kyle Lowry in a way, because it wasn't his success. It was the Raptors making the change with Kawhi Leonard coming in and Marc Gasol and Danny Green. So there would still be some who wouldn't accept that new narrative, but winning does do the best towards that.
Right. And I guess we're already leaps and bounds ahead of this first round loss. We're talking hypotheticals in the finals. What does a Kyle Lowry performance to reclaim his narrative look like to you? And I hate to be as silly as give me points, rebounds, assists, but like, what does that look like to you? What does the play style look to you?
50% from three, hitting 2 pull-up transition threes from above the break, probably around 23-8-5. If he's putting up those numbers, that would kind of change the mindset for people, but he needs to be efficient along the way, and the numbers need to be larger. Last year, his true shooting percentages were really good. The year before that, they were also solid, but the base statistic numbers weren't quite high enough in order to shift that narrative.
So when you think of like the dominant Kyle Lowry, you think of like 37 points against the Cavs 2 years ago. You think of like 35 points 2 years ago again, like those types of games where he takes on role of scorer rather than when he's like has like a plus minus of like 43 and he's dropped 15 assists and 11 points. Like in the playoffs, you think that his road forward is as a scorer or playmaker?
In regards to the Raptor success or in regards to him changing his narrative?
Let's do both.
Okay, so in regards to the Raptors' success, I would say more so playmaking, just because there are individuals on the roster who rely on that. If Kyle Lowry is getting the 8 assists and, you know, he's picking and popping for Ibaka mid-range jumpers throughout the day and, you know, splashing just a few pull-up transition jumpers, that's enough. He doesn't need to be putting up, you know, 30-plus points a game. Those nights will be just kind of gravy. But if we are talking about what the general public requires in order to shift that narrative, it would be as a scorer, because that's what people kind of care about the most. You know, you mentioned Damian Lillard. Yeah, he's been busted out of the playoffs a few times in kind of heartbreaking fashion, but he's also put up some massive scoring numbers and closed out a series with a big big scoring play.
And so I guess let's close the chapter on this Kyle Lowry thing by...
Please.
Let's have a prediction from you. What do you see for him in game two? What's the takeaway?
I think in game two, he'll take 5 triples. He'll hit 2 or 3 of them. So we're looking at 40% or better. But we're still looking at hopefully a 14-point outing from him instead of a 0 and getting into the 7 to 9 range for assists. That's my hope.
Good. Good. That would be nice to see. After watching,
yeah, and that's enough.
That's definitely enough. Yeah, that was. I think it was Assad at Swar Lasers on Twitter who pointed out that Nick Nurse's comment said, "We like it doesn't matter if Kyle scores like 25 or 4, like we can still win the games." And it turns out that he scored 0 when we lost by 3. When if he had scored the base, the very bottom of what Nurse said, they would have won. There's just. I guess this leads into, and we'll leave the Kyle Lowry stuff behind right now, but this leads into the next thing, because it just seems like everything lines up for the Raptors to spell our doom. And the question is, right, is are the Raptors destined to repeat this fresh hell every playoffs? Why does this happen? And you see things like even just a Nick Nurse quote lays out how the Raptors can actually win a game. And if you read it obtuse, they come 1 point shy of it. Just things like that. And it's because we're such, you know, an anxious fan base and we're so pedantic that we read into that and we say, oh my God, Kyle Lowry, Nick Nurse, what is happening? But forgetting Kyle Lowry, why is this stuff happening? Because he wasn't the major problem. Why is this happening to the Raptors this year, most of all?
We're cursed. I don't have an explanation for it. We've kind of talked a little bit negatively and also have some optimism built into this. I'm still very optimistic in regards to this season and the Raptors, this series and the Raptors season overall. I picked the Raptors to win this series in 5, and it's still on the table. I at least have that to hang my hat on. So I don't know why this happens, but it seems to be a story that repeats itself constantly. And I'm hoping that we can move forward and that it won't happen next round, but we're a long way from that still.
I think maybe the most important thing to happen is like the NBA needs to, the way people perceive seeds 2 through 8 need to be different, because Golden State adds this layer of just nobody can beat them, and you understand. But even Golden State, they almost lost every single year on the way to a championship. It does lend itself to the idea. I know basketball, because it's not as high variance as football, and there's so many possessions that you expect the best teams to win out because there's a lot of possessions to prove your merit on over and over again. But basketball, you look at the 76ers who lost. You look at the Nuggets who lost, and even in years past, the Boston Celtics, Chicago Bulls series where they were tied 2-2. I think we're getting closer to an NBA where there's the Golden State Warriors, but it's kind of in game ones, it seems like an any given Sunday type of thing, like how it is in football. But we perceive it to be like that in the NBA, the better team should always win, when that very clearly hasn't been happening. And unfortunately for the Raptors, they seem to get all of the crap from that narrative of like, hey, listen, the better team wins. And then there's other better teams that are always losing. But I think we always focus on the Raptors because, like you said, we're cursed not only to lose, but to receive all this hopeless banter that just dooms us. I didn't even frame a question for you there. I'm just ranting.
No, that's fine. That's where we're at in this conversation. It happens to everyone. There's people already, and I picked the Warriors to sweep the Clippers in this opening round, and you know that could very well happen. But the Warriors might just get bored, catch up on LA nightlife one time, and they could lose one as well. It's just it's one thing to lose along the way. It's another that the Raptors have this pattern that makes those jokes so easy of those first round losses and traumatizing defeats at the hands of, stupid Paul Pierce and LeBron James just hitting incredible running jumpers in the dying seconds. So there's enough of as we were talking about with Kyle Lowry, there's enough of a narrative in regards to the Raptors that this isn't just an individual occurrence. It just lends credence to the jokes that have been going on for, 6 years now and even before then.
So, okay, let's live up to our name then. As optimistic Raptors bloggers or writers. I actually dislike the term bloggers, so we'll retire that. Raptors right. Writers. What did you like in game one? Like, are there good takeaways? Are you happy with any performances? Are you happy with any schemes that the Raptors ran?
I was happy with a lot of what we saw from Siakam. He needs to hit those jumpers from beyond the arc just to keep the defense honest. If he puts up another 0-for-4 spot in game two, the Magic are going to be more willing to hedge off of him. And when you have a long rangey defender like Jonathan Isaac, that causes issues when people are trying to get into the paint. But he wasn't scared. He was very assertive. He attacked the paint. He used his advantages when he had a size mismatch or a speed mismatch. He got out in transition. I also really liked Danny's game in a lot of ways. He was one of the more negative players in regards to plus minus. But I think that he takes those same shots in game two and he will have a very, very impactful game. Those are kind of my positives. I also really liked Gasol. I think the fact that we have a center that just can kind of one-on-one stick with Vucevic, that was the game plan that Nick Nurse drew up going into game one. Take Vucevic out of the game and force the guards to beat you. Unfortunately, they did. But Gasol did a fantastic job in the tasks that he was assigned to.
Right. That was my feature for... It just came out this morning, was I watched every single possession in which Isaac guarded Siakam. And Siakam, after the first quarter, it became very apparent that Siakam was not going to try to score against Isaac. And he had to be so wily and crafty in how he looked for his own offense. It was after the first quarter, of the 8 baskets that Siakam made, only 2 of them came with Isaac as a primary defender. He tried desperately the rest of the game to just get away from him. And you look at the shots that he made with Isaac guarding him. They're contested so freaking well. Like, it's hard to fathom how well somebody can guard Siakam or just be built in a lab to be a prototypical Siakam defender. But Isaac embodies that because he's so long, he doesn't foul, and he sits back when he's supposed to. And that's where you said, if Siakam hits from downtown, maybe that changes things. And it would be great. But like Siakam, I really liked the way he played because they kept going to him, even though, you know, when he had the hardest matchup, it seemed, of any offensive player, he had the hardest job for himself to do. Lowry against Augustine, one of Fournier, that's easier to create a shot. Same with Danny Green working off of them. Kawhi Leonard against Gordon actually seemed like a better matchup, especially since Siakam himself was hunting to try and get matched up with Gordon. And Gasol and Vucevic, like, Gasol isn't necessarily a creator of his own offense, but Vucevic isn't as good a defender as Isaac. So for the Raptors to go to the most difficult matchup for 24 shots really speaks to how crafty and resilient Siakam's offense was in this game. So yeah, I really like that you highlighted that. Danny Green as well. I mean, he was the second best three-point shooter in the whole league this year. I don't expect him to miss corner threes like he did in game one. And I thought he did a great job chasing Evan Fournier, DJ Augustine, either one. He was especially good against DJ Augustine in the second half, by the way. Mm-hmm. But like the way he played on those guys, whether it be pick and roll or chasing them on pin downs or curls, his defense was so diligent. And like the spacing he gave the shooters to try and incentivize mid-range jumpers or floaters rather than give up those three-pointers that Orlando likes to take with Augustine and Fournier, Augustine being joining Danny Green in the top 10 of three-point shooters in the whole league. And then, yeah, like you said, Marc Gasol did such a good job on Vucevic that he just kind of isolated his offense. And Vucevic was like 3 for 11, something like that. And it seemed like two of those makes came with Serge guarding him. So yeah, those all the things you highlighted, I agree with wholeheartedly. Is there something that you think that they can focus on going forward? Like game two, what is the big thing they need to correct?
It's going to be tough because we really got torched with the DJ Augustine and Vucevic pick and roll. Not so much in regards to Vucevic, but if you go over the screen and kind of chase him around, Augustine can get in deep, you know, kick out to some perimeter shooters. And if you cut under, he's one of the best pull-up triple three-point shooters in the entire league this year. So they've got to do something about that mismatch. And really, as much as the focus is on shutting down Vucevic, they need to kind of figure out a way to slow down DJ Augustine, which is just such a stupid thing to say. I don't know how we got to this point, but it's true. He deserves that credit. He's really built himself into being a capable player for the Magic, and he fills that role well.
Yeah, he was a godsend for them, especially like for him to play at this level. I remember when he signed with the Raptors and he couldn't hang on as like a third string point guard or kind of a pseudo second string point guard. And they ended up playing for the Bulls, and he was really good for them. Everybody was like, damn it, like, why did we get rid of DJ Augustine? And it still rings true 4 years later. How poetic. I'll say something, and I really like how the Raptors look in the pick and roll. And it was super encouraging that Vucevic only had his points in the second half when Ibaka was in. And that's not saying Ibaka did a bad job. It's just saying that that's when he scored his baskets. And up until the 5 points that Augustine had in the last like minute and a half, his layup after he shed Danny Green and then got to the rim, and then obviously his three-pointer where both Gasol and Kawhi went under, he had only had 1 point, and it came on a free throw in the whole second half, which really speaks to like how well Danny Green played him. And I honestly, even though Gasol isn't that fleet of foot, I think he played very well. And part of the scheme, I'm going to ask you if you agree with me, but part of the scheme seemed to be like pushing him either to the sideline or either pushing him to his left hand. So when he would snake the pick and roll, the Raptors would just try and push him all the way out to the sideline. Like you wanted, if he was going to his right hand, he's going all the way to the sideline. If he's going to his left hand, he could take it to the basket, but he's not a good left-handed finisher. So they just kind of allowed him that avenue. Did you see anything like that?
I was noticing the same type of thing. I generally speaking, I think that they stick with the same game plan in regards to Vucevic. They force him into those spots where he's a little less efficient than he is in those other spots. Keep him from getting to his ideal areas, and the Raptors will have that similar success. And Gasol is a big body. He's a smart defender. And while he's not fleet of foot, he knows how to play those angles and get the offensive player into more negative space instead of their specific targets. So one-on-one, Gasol is capable. Ibaka did get beat a number of times by Vucevic. He's just not quite as strong and or physical. And so Ibaka, man. I go back to it. Ibaka hurt them on both sides of the floor, and we'll need a better performance from him. And it goes back to last year. He got beat terribly last year and was awful in the playoffs, and the Raptors will just need more from him.
I have two more questions for you. And the first one, well, before we go to Twitter questions, of course. The first one, you are, if I think anything is your brand, is a lover of role players. And any thoughts on Jody Meek's performance in this game, even though it was very short?
Hey, he was a plus four in 3 minutes, so you got to give him credit for that. Jody Meeks, I was happy to see him as the ninth man instead of bringing in Lynn, even if it was just to provide a few minutes. His shooting can be a weapon, and the 3 points that he got were from a pump fake in the corner where he drove and hit the and one kind of mid-range floater. So he has a little bit of dynamic to his offensive game. But he won't take things off the floor in regards to his shooting. Lynn, there's just too much variance in regards to what he can provide, and his shooting has been terrible since coming to Toronto. Whereas Meeks, you at least know that he has that one skill that you can rely on if needed.
Okay, and the second question is, if you had an option to change your prediction to 6 games or leave it at 5 games for the series, which would you do?
I'm going to leave it at 5.
That's bold. I like it.
it's partly because I like to believe that I can be correct. So I want to stick with my initial guess, even though the one that we lost, I was predicting would come on a Terrence Ross flurry. But I'm... When looking at Saturday's game and trying to be as critical as possible, I think the Magic played up to their ceiling and the Raptors played closer to their floor. They were missing shots. They were failing to set positive screens. Defensively, they were hit and miss on a lot of possessions in regards to, you know, even on that final bomb from Augustine that won the game, Kawhi slipped and went with Vucevic instead of stepping up on his man. So there was just little errors that the Raptors made that hurt them, whereas the Magic played almost a perfect game plan for their system and for their personnel. So if the Raptors can play closer to even their ceiling or even their average, I think they'll be just fine. Yeah, so I'm sticking with 5.
I love that, honestly. You are really living up to the optimist name there. That's incredible that you still stuck with 5. I am not
optimist
as
or
you.
Like in denial. I don't know, but we'll find out.
It's like, how, as a Raptors writer, as a Raptors fan, how do you respect yourself or your team if you just take on this thing? Because it's, you lose just no matter what, because it's like, if you believe in your team at all, which you should, a person really should believe in their team. You say, yes, they're the number two team in the East, maybe the second or third best team in the league. The Vegas has them as the third most likely team to win the title. They're going to beat the Orlando Magic. That's not a bad opinion to have. That's a normal person's opinion. And then you go out there as a Raptors fan, bold as ever, and you say, I think my team will win. And then the world just rains on you. And then it's just, you're wrong. Your favorite player, that point guard who's lovable, he's horrible. Everybody hates you. Oh my God, the idiocy. But then it's like, am I supposed to bet against my team, the 2 seed? Because that would be, I didn't see anybody suggesting from Raptors Twitter that the Raptors would lose game 1. And I think it was just, maybe, was it Damon Jones, the ex-Cavs coach, the guy who had J.R. Smith throw tortilla soup at him? He was the only guy who suggested that the Magic could win the series. But, I mean, I just don't know how we do it. It's just, you have to be so self-deprecating as a Raptors fan if you want to be right some of the time. Except for game 2. If you have a game 2 coming up like we do, we get to be bold. Like, we're going to win that game for sure, but only because the game 1 loss necessitates it.
Yeah, so 2 things. One, I really appreciate you making sure that we knew that it was tortilla soup that J.R. Smith threw. That's a key detail that we all need to be aware of. But 2, I do think that the Raptors are going to come out and just really lay the clamps down and dominate game 2. At least that's my hope, and maybe it's blind optimism, but they have shown that they are the better team. They have a higher ceiling. They are more consistent. The Magic had a great second half of the season and were one of the better teams post All-Star. But the Raptors, I do believe, are still a superior unit and should come out and win. And I'm going to stick with that.
I'm very happy that you're optimistic, because it kind of lends itself that I get to be as well. But I also get to take half measures, be like, whoa, that's crazy, man. So I don't look as bad.
You get to ask the question, would you change to 6 games instead of actually making your own definitive statement? But
when I did the series preview with Anthony, I said 5, and I basically had the same reaction. He said it was going to be a sweep, and I said, wow, that's bold. And he was like, yeah, I think it's going to be good. And that's the thing about doing the Raptors podcast now and bringing on Raptors people to talk about Raptors stuff is we might be a bit insular, because everybody I talk to is like, hell yeah, they're a great team. I'm like, yeah, I agree with that. That makes total sense to me. I guess we're going to do the ad read, and then we'll get into Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Accidents happen, and when they do, you'll want a lawyer who will stand up to the insurance company and fight for your rights. In case of emergency, have this name in your back pocket, Goldfinger, Brian Goldfinger. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you. Get Goldfinger today.
Welcome back to the Raptors Weekly Podcast. I'm joined by Matt Chance. Yes, that Matt Chance, the one who is the optimistic fan. And we'll be getting into the Twitter questions. We posed a question on Twitter. We said, hey, we're recording the weekly podcast with Matt Chance. We're taking some questions. Send them in. 2 people responded with 3 questions. And we're going to respond to all of them, because 3 questions isn't a big ask. And since Matt Chance and I are servants to the readers. Jorge Harbajosa says, how do I defend Lowry to my friends and family? Like, without plus minus. As an aside, nice job on my name in Spanish last pod. It's a joke, so as long as you nail the Harbajosa, we good. Well, I did it again. Perfect. Well, we haven't left Lowry in the past, it seems, like we said we would. How do I defend Lowry to my friends and family? Like, without plus minus. Matt, how do you do it?
He contributes more in just the scoring. Yes, the plus minus is a key stat, and I think that we do a disservice if we dismiss that. There is a variance in regards to a single game plus minus, just because if you get paired with the right player, your plus minus will be better, and if you get paired with the wrong player, or even just the other team gets hot for a few minutes, it's going to tank your numbers. But when you look up and down the Raptors chart, he was the only positive plus minus, except for Serge, who was paired most of his minutes with Kyle, and also Jody Meeks, who was a plus 4. I guess Norm was also plus 1, but whatever. So most people were in the negative. Kyle was the one consistent one, and everybody's numbers who played with Kyle went up. So we do a disservice if we dismiss that. But the fact that he's a point guard and was the second leading rebounder on the entire team, he got 7 after Siakam's 9. So he even out-rebounded Kawhi. He out-rebounded Gasol. He out-rebounded Danny Green. Never mind. I saw Ibaka's at 8. Anyways, he out-rebounded the majority of the team and led the team in assists. So the Raptors go as Kyle goes, and everybody's numbers do improve when he's out there. So don't just look at his scoring. Don't just look at his shot chart, which will improve. There's no way that he puts up another 0-6 in my mind, or an 0-7, whatever it was. But plus 11 is good. don't dismiss that.
I saw somebody edit on Kyle Lowry's face onto Wilt Chamberlain, and then put the 100 sign as a plus 11, and I felt like your fellow Manitobian Justin Rowan burst into my living room and dunked on me when I saw that. I had never experienced so much pain and laughter at the same time. It was just the perfect satire.
That hurts.
Yeah. How does one explain Kyle Lowry's? Well, that's the thing, is like everybody wants you to just give them a stat. Like, I love the stat where I can say, hey, listen, Kobe Bryant is like 24% in the last 5 minutes of games. That's pretty bad. Like, that's a nice stat to throw out there, but there isn't like a stat you can throw out there to vindicate Kyle Lowry besides plus minus or like pi or something like that, because people do like stats. You can't just say look, he screens really well. Watch him sneak, like he'll come up, they'll be running like an elevator play, but he'll switch it and he'll set a screen for Siakam. Siakam will go in for a layup. Like little things he does like that, you can't just explain like the 80 things he does throughout a game and expect to keep your sanity. So how do you explain and defend Kyle Lowry to your friends without plus minus? I don't know, just hope your friends understand basketball a little more, that like they know that plus minus is important, but it's not everything, but also that they value Kyle Lowry as a player. That's, I felt like Lewis Zatzman had, I thought it was the easiest question of all time on our Raptors roundtable when he said, like, do you want Kyle Lowry starting for the Raptors next year? I was like, yes, no matter what, obviously you do. And then he did a damn offer. I was just, it felt cruel. But yeah, how do you defend him? You just hope that your friends are Kyle Lowry fans. That's basically it. Otherwise, stay off Twitter. Leave your cell phone alone. You'll get dunked on.
I've seen players put up 40-point games, and it's a terrible game from them. They do so many things that actually hurt their team. They take ill-advised shots that just so happen to go in, or a lot of shots that don't go in. So 0-6 looks bad, but you know, somebody can get 30 points on, you know, 4 of 30 shooting and get praised for that because they had 30 points. So we can't just look at a simple scoring metric and say, that's the thing that matters. It's what does the person do to help their team? And if they're doing other things to help, you know, adding 7 rebounds, you know, leading the team with 8 assists, getting 2 steals. So doing things that, you know, help lead towards the end objective of winning the game, then I don't care if a player goes 0-6. You know, if Kyle does another 0-point game, the Raptors win, and while he's on the floor, they outscore the Magic by 30 points, I'm fine. You know, that's great. I'd rather him score because that's, you know, fun. But it's okay. It's the end objective is winning, and that's what matters.
Which is the worst high scoring performance you've ever seen, and why is it Kobe's last game?
That was that was shameful. He did the exact same thing that Devin Booker did in order to get 71. He just did it in his final game at an obscene age. And because he is one of the all-time scoring leaders in the NBA, he gets celebrated because it's him going out on top on a shameful Laker team that was just embarrassing to watch. So, yes, that's probably among the most shameful.
Just to be a little bit indulgent, I guess, before we get into the next Twitter question, where does this Lakers season rank as far as entertainment for you?
Oh, this was just so satisfying to watch. It was a pleasure as a basketball fan to kind of be able to enjoy this ride from a distance and not feel emotionally engaged to it. At the start of the season, I predicted that the Lakers would miss the playoffs and got a little bit of flack for that. Obviously, not as much as, you know, the better known people like Tim Bontemps, who really went out on a limb and saying it. But they were just a terribly constructed team from day one. Poor management, a front office with no experience that was just there due to nepotism of the Laker genealogy and just some terrible people to cheer for, like Rajon Rondo and Lance Stevenson. So I enjoyed every single moment of it, and the fact that it just keeps going into the off season is even better.
I thought that the Magic Johnson interview was a perfect culmination of that year.
That was just insanity.
I got so much joy from watching certain parts of that interview that I can hardly even express it. Like the fact that he was sitting there, like being like, hey, listen, like everybody keeps asking me about next year. I'm not going to be here. I was like, oh my God, this guy, he's actually saying this stuff. It's kind of like what, you know, your workers say, like in the back room, everybody is making their jokes about the manager and all that kind of stuff, or like how they're going to quit. But he did it on television. He's like, listen, my life is so great. I don't even need to be here. I built this team for LeBron with Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevenson, JaVale McGee, who was good. And, you know, I thought Kyle Kuzma was the next, let's say, Paul Pierce or Tracy McGrady. Turns out he isn't. And then they're just, at the end of the season, they're sitting, and LeBron spending the last days of the regular season cheering on Dwayne Wade in Brooklyn. Just the craziest season. I can, so at least we're not the Lakers. Maybe that's the silver lining. That's why I brought this up. It wasn't to get jokes off about Magic Johnson and co. It was to provide a silver lining for the Raptors.
I mean, even if that was the point, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it's a good enough point. Okay. Next Twitter question. Athul J, do you honestly trust Pascal as the second guy on our team to score?
Yes. I'm like, is there more to this question?
That's it.
Yeah,
that's
I do.
It.
I think Nurse might go to the well a little bit too often in regards to having Siakam initiate for himself. But if I'd be more worried about that if he was a player that got tunnel vision a lot. But he's a willing passer. He looks for the open man. He likes to drop it off to the big. You saw the cohesiveness that he had with Poeltl last year. He really works well with cutters on the baseline. So I have absolutely no issue with Siakam initiating a lot of the offense, whether it's for himself or for someone else. Ideally, will he be the second playmaker on the team? Likely not. But on any given night, I got no issues.
Totally. I agree. And Athul J, I'm sorry, but this is going to be a shameless plug. But I wrote a big piece just detailing exactly how he was a great second option in game one. So I might just tell you to read that, and you actually might be able to enjoy that a lot. If you're looking for somebody to validate Pascal Siakam as a second scorer. And then Athul J, this is the last Twitter question, says, is it just me? Or does whenever Kyle does not have his shooting touch, he only takes threes and waits for one to hit in order to get his flow back? I mean, would it not be better if we can get him going by taking mid-range J's or be more aggressive and drive to the hoop instead? I'll take this one first because, you know, I said we were done with Kyle Lowry, but we aren't. So I'll take the brunt of this one. There is something to be said for, and I'm addressing you, Athul, there's something to be said for drawing up plays to get certain players going. As the Raptors are currently constructed, you'd asked the question before, is Pascal Siakam good enough to be the Raptors' second scorer? Next to D'Angelo Russell, maybe not. Next to Kawhi Leonard, one of the best scorers league-wide, totally. And having Marc Gasol and Danny Green, one of the best tertiary options league-wide as well. Kyle Lowry doesn't need to be a type of guy that you get going and you feed him possessions. And if they had done that last night, I just kind of fear that he ends up going over 12 and with mid-range jumpers as well. So I understand why it's frustrating to see Kyle take and miss shots. I mean, we all felt the frustration yesterday. But the Raptors have a bevy of options at their disposal, and they're supposed to use them. That's why it was kind of crazy to see them go to Siakam so often. And he responded, but they don't need to force Kyle Lowry's possessions that he's scoring like on ball. He just needs to make his open shots. And yeah, I guess that's my answer for that. Do you have anything, Matt?
Yeah, and if Kyle was actively hunting and just, you know, really forcing the issue of trying to get his offensive game going, you know, taking shot after shot, I'd have more concerns. But there was one instance, I believe it happened in the third quarter, where he got wide open. He was in the middle of this, you know, awful shooting night, wide open from above the break for a triple, faked it to get the man to kind of hedge his way a little bit, and then kicked it to the wing in order for, I believe, a Danny Green three. So he had a chance at a wide open shot in order to kind of shoot his way out of the slump. But instead, passed it over to a guy who was already having a little bit of a good shooting night to make the more efficient play for a catch and shoot. So I'm not worried. I keep saying that, and it seems silly. And this podcast is kind of helping me talk myself into being a little bit more hopeful. But we need him to take those shots. There would be a bigger issue if Kyle changed his offensive game because he missed a few shots. If he goes 0 for 5, that's okay. But he needs to be taking the shots that he would routinely take, because that's where the Raptors find the most success.
Totally. So, this being the Raptors Therapy Podcast, is there anything else you want to get off your chest? Any crazy questions you need answered, Matt?
I'm good. My wife has been asking me all day how I'm doing, because she can tell I'm just a little bit off. I hate that this stuff affects me the way that it does, and it just feels stupid. But it is, that's what makes being a fan great. And you read that piece from earlier. If everything was always great, I think that it would get a little bit boring, and those great moments would feel a little bit less good. If the Raptors go on to win 4 straight, this series is going to feel fantastic for the Raptors, and in part because we started with such a low point. Having those moments that make us reflect and question and enjoy those positive moments a little bit more makes fandom an absolutely terrible experience, but also makes it really fun. So I'm trying to be optimistic and kind of talk my way through this. And I hope that we get a better outcome in games 2 through 6, two through five, because we're winning it in 5.
I love what you've done, because you drew up the framework of the hero story, and you told us that the juxtaposition of pain is the only thing that makes joy worthwhile. And if we can't all just imagine the Raptors as a man fighting a dragon and having to come out on top, then what are we here for, really? This is just a microcosm of the gladiators of old. And that's what this is. I mean, fandom, that's totally what it is failing makes the winning so much better. And
that was totally right. Poetry right there.
Yeah. Grade 8 poetry, maybe. Cannons to the left of them. Cannons to the right of them. Matt, thank you so much for coming on, man. I feel like that's a good way to wrap up on some fake deep poetry. Tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah, all of my stuff, writing-wise, can be found on Raptors Republic. And on Twitter, I'm m_Shantz, S-H-A-N-T-Z. And I'd love to kind of interact with you there.
Am I just learning now that it's Shantz, not Chance?
That's correct. You are just learning that.
I think maybe before I would have seen you as like a teacher, but since it's Shantz, I see you as a professor now.
it just adds a next level of education. Wonderful.
There's brevity to Shantz.
Yeah, most people pronounce it as Shantz, like just if you read my name, but it's pronounced Shantz.
That's how you tell a person's class is I'm of the lower class because I should Shantz. But if someone says Shantz, you know they're of the upper class.
There's a sophistication to it.
Yeah, well, you have to introduce, you know, any type of discrimination anywhere you can. It's the best way to go about life, I'm sure. Anyway, Matt, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Day. Thanks for having me. You too.
Yeah. As to all the listeners, have a great day as well. Stay blessed.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
When you're a pro, your reputation is built and proven over time. That's why the Home Depot carries Loctite PL Premium Max Construction Adhesive, the strongest on the market. It stays 100% solid after curing. It won't develop air pockets. And like your reputation, it holds up over time. Right now, get 12 or more for the bulk price of only $8.53 each. Loctite PL Premium Max at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Minimum purchase required. U.S. only.